Hey, it's Chaz and AJ.
Hello.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoy it. And please subscribe, comment, share, do all those things that make us look good.
And be nice.
Thank you. Talking about jobs you can't take a break from because AJ was stuck in a box for 24 hours.
Yep.
And he couldn't take a break.
Nope. Could not take
a
break.
We got concrete, corrections officer, Amazon driver, line cook, sprinkler system installer, Jake and Canton.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, I'm a teacher. And in addition to being a teacher, I also work as a sports coach and bus driver, all for the same district. So,
wait, you're a bus driver, a sports coach, and a teacher?
Yes.
Yeah, but you take breaks from that. I mean, once you're in there, you're not, like, sealed for life or nothing like that. I mean, you can walk away. I mean, you don't have the kids, like, 24-7 on the bus or on the field and stuff like that, right? So it's kind of like you can get away. At least you should.
Well, right. But during the school day, I've got kids in front of me pretty much all day. I can't, you know.
Well, you can, like, they got the teacher's lounge. Just lock the door behind you. Go have a cigarette.
Yeah, we did.
My teacher used to do that.
A few minutes for lunch.
All right, so do you get breaks in between the classes? One class leaves, and it's a couple minutes, and then the next class.
We get 15 minutes for lunch. We've got 3 minutes in between classes, but we're expected to be in the hallway monitoring passing time and whatnot, greeting students at the door.
Greeting students at the door? What do you guys, Walmart?
Right.
Hello, welcome to math class.
Welcome. Yeah. Table discussing,
thank
yes.
Thank you for coming.
Right, fractions today. Thank you, yeah. What grade are you talking about here?
High school,
okay. All right, so at least half the class isn't showing up anyway, so you're good there. They're cutting, so that kind of takes down some of the people.
How is that even possible? You're a bus driver and a teacher, so you leave...
Yeah, so I work for the for a district where we have buses that send kids out to do different activities throughout the day. So some of the teachers are certified and, you know, have our licenses to drive the buses that are owned by the school district as well.
Is this a private school?
Semi-private.
Imagine that.
Imagine if you're like all three, like you're a student and you have, there's your teacher, and then all of a sudden he's driving you to your sports thing.
That's wild.
He's a coach.
Well, he drives himself and all the students to school.
Right. Save gas money.
So what is semi-private?
So you have to apply to come to our school, but we pretty much take everybody.
Okay. So it's a technicality.
Right.
Yeah, so we take from like 13 different surrounding towns.
But are parents paying for the kids to go to the school?
No.
Okay.
Now you're paying for it.
That's interesting. Yeah. Wow, I think you get no break. AJ sounds like...
Yeah, I mean, you get some breaks in there. It's not like the guy with the cement mixer had to get there before it gets hard, you know? Whereas this week, at least you can like kind of walk away for a second. We go to the bathroom, fake you got, you know, get the poops. You know, at least leave for a little bit, you know.
I got the
poops. You can get away. Yeah, no one stops when you say the poops. Yeah.
All right, Jake. I appreciate what you do. Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Bill in Orange is a teacher. Do you want to add to what Jake was saying?
Yeah, I'm just going to back him up on that. You know, I happen to teach at a technology school, and I teach manufacturing. And same kind of deal. You know, I've got students that are working on dangerous pieces of equipment, and it's one of those deals that you really don't want to walk away from.
What you got to do is have one class where you teach them how to slack, you know, teach them coffee breaks. Yeah. Everybody grab a syringe, a cup of coffee, going outside for a moment. All right, now, here's how to look busy, but not really be busy. All you need is a clipboard and a confused look on your face, and you're all set.
Exactly. So it's just one of those deals where, you know, I'm not sitting there watching concrete dry, which is a very difficult job, but at the same time, you know, just the liability and just making sure everybody's safe and make sure everybody's doing the right thing on some dangerous equipment is very important. So
yeah, I remember seventh grade in wood shop class, some kid ran his hand right into the saw. That ended wood shop class for a while.
We had a girl her hair got caught in the lathe.
Oh, no.
That was a quick thing. All of a sudden, she was standing, all of a sudden, bing, she bounced off the thing and hit the floor. Blood everywhere. Took a huge chunk of, like, her scalp out. Yeah.
All right, we'll see, Bill.
I could tell you some crazy stories, but, so it was just kind of quick example of one of those other jobs that you can't walk away from.
Well, Tell us a crazy story that you heard of.
Well, I'll tell you a crazy story that had happened to me. I've been teaching for just about 20 years, and my second year in teaching, I was about 2 feet away from a student that he cut his thumb off on a table saw.
Oh, did you catch it?
Say it again?
Did you catch it? Like, it had to fly, right?
Reattach it.
Give it back to him for his birthday or something?
Right. Isn't that something? Yeah. Right.
It was just kind of hanging by a thread, but
So you didn't have to look for it. Were they able to put it back?
They put it back, and to give the student credit, the student actually came back the next day because he was so motivated to finish up his project. So they put it back on, and then it lasted about a week, and they had to take it back off.
Oh. In some cases like that, the person will take their big toe and use it as a thumb, which kind of messes up.
That's if they can't find the thumb.
Right.
They don't
Well, I know somebody did that, actually, yeah. They actually...
Okay, well, not on purpose.
Gentlemen. Well, they... No, that's what I said. You don't want to have a toe for a thumb. No. They lost their thumb, and it did...
You would want a toe as a thumb.
No, I would not.
You could suck your toe.
No, because now you got a messed-up-looking hand and messed-up-looking foot.
Hmm.
I'd rather just miss my thumb. Screw it.
It sounds like you're playing musical chairs with your fingers and toes. Let's cut them all off and rearrange them.
Okay. So.
All right, well.
Printers have that happen a lot.
I would say that teacher is right. If you're teaching, some kind of a shop class.
In that class, yes. You got to stay there.
You're done.
Yes.
You can't take a break.
Yeah. If it's math, forget it. Walk away.
Alan Shelton.
Good morning, everybody.
Hey.
Yeah, like Chaz, you were talking about your brother driving that mixer.
Yeah.
Well, about 35 years ago when I was a kid, I worked at a concrete plant. On the weekends, they would have people go inside the barrel on the plant, which is the same thing as on the truck. And they would have to bring 2 80-pound air jackhammers and jackhammer all the dried concrete off the flights. Well, I turned the barrel on by accident.
Oh, no.
Guys in there. Yeah, it made 2 full revolutions. It didn't turn that fast, but still. Can you imagine inside there you got 280-pound jackhammers flying around and,
yeah, and
you're jumping
of concrete
over the flight? You know?
That sounds a lot louder than usual.
Yeah.
It's like being in a hamster ball.
I was real embarrassed, man.
Yeah.
I had to go get a 6-pack and a half a pint for the guys, and I kept my job.
Yeah, you look at them beat the crap out of you. Jackhammer your ass.
I am, but they knew my father, so I was protected.
Okay,
so I was lucky.
What did they do? They grab their jackhammers and run?
I would think.
They would drop. They probably dropped the jackhammers. They're 2 Portuguese guys, barely spoke English. But oh my God, I heard a few choice words.
Yeah, I made that one
really
out.
Really embarrassing.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, brother. Jeff Forshaw, our CEO, and I have been hitting restaurants in New Haven. It's called Taste of Haven. We've been trying all different types of ethnic food. Yesterday was, or Friday was my wheelhouse. Italian.
Yes.
So we went to Consiglio's in New Haven. For over 80 years, this place on Wooster Street has been serving up epic Italian meals. And Friday was no different. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Chaz. How are you today?
Oh, my God. I'm still stuffed.
I was going to say, you guys digest by now? I saw those meals. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, you definitely ate more. You ate more of the lasagna than I did, Chaz.
Yes.
No one's arguing here.
I showed great restraint. I think I went to town on the calamari, though, which, kind of knocked me out.
Oh, that looked great.
Yeah.
That looked cooked perfectly.
Exactly. It was cooked perfectly.
We had ossobuco, which is veal shank, that you'd never had before, right?
No.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's a good one.
And then you scoop the marrow out of the marrow bone. It's like a delicious fat.
And you put it on bread, right?
Animals. Oh, yeah. Well, we didn't put it on bread. We just like swirled it.
Put it on your nipples. You put that anywhere.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's like heaven.
Very versatile.
I put it on my ice cream.
You know what? I prefer we not talk about my nipples. Okay?
Technically, we didn't.
What were those rice balls? What was that called?
Arancini.
Arancini.
Oh, I love those.
Which means little oranges, right? And they're stuffed with cheese and a little bit of meat. I think I preferred the calamari. I thought the calamari was light and delicious. And But the ossobuco and the lasagna stole the show,
yeah,
for sure.
Oh, you're right. The calamari
and our service
was light.
Yeah. Lovely. Sarah, the lady that took care of us, she was lovely.
Yeah. And she had been there for like 29 years. The place has been open for over 80 years.
Wow.
And they hold on to their talent there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that calamari was just a light breading. Which was great.
But I love rice balls. Oh,
I can
suck those down big time.
Mm. Oh, Chad, AJ, what is it with you? I mean, you're talking about balls and sucking down. Stop it already. And nipples?
Nipples, AJ.
The nipples, Chad said. Chad said the nipple part.
The CEO's on, and AJ says, I love sucking down balls.
Rice balls!
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah. Oh my God! So anyway, so the next time is going to be something. I'm going to really have to get you out of your comfort zone again. Although I was proud of you, you liked the ossobuco, and
it's great.
So next time we'll go somewhere that we will make sure we have nothing that AJ can make reference to.
Good luck with that. Okay. Go have water.
When we're ordering, Jeff, you know, we read about their lasagna, and I'm a huge lasagna fan. And Jeff said, well, we'll take one order of lasagna and split it. And I said, no.
you don't split it.
I want my own order.
Exactly.
Like, I know how this is going to go. I don't want to just eat the whole thing.
Yeah.
And we had so much food. Jeff said, well, let's order one, and then we'll send you home with one, okay? You cry, baby.
Was there any meat in lasagna?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes. And it was never my plan to send home, like, some portion of lasagna for Jen. There's no way in the world I was going to do that. She got her own portion.
Yeah.
If you wanted to steal it from her, that's fine. But I wasn't going to send her, like, a dog-eared, half-eaten lasagna. That just wasn't going to happen.
I'm interested in what you thought of that lasagna.
I loved it. You know, it was delicious. It was different. In some ways, it like didn't have the whatever bechamel on top. It was interesting because when I make lasagna, I'm like have a very different way. I make it just cheese. And of course I've had all different kinds of lasagna, and so this was really tops. It was great. If next time you talk to Keith has actually had my own homemade cheese lasagna.
Wow. See, my mom makes it totally different. She puts pepperoni, sausage, and meat sauce in it.
Pepperoni is weird, but I've had your mother's lasagna. It's really good.
Yeah,
it sounds weird in a blueprint.
Oh yeah,
when you have it, it's great.
It's amazing.
But I'm wondering, where would you, of all the places you've had lasagna, where would you rank that?
I loved it. I don't order lasagna out very often, I can't think of any I had better. Certainly, as it gets cold and you're looking for that comfort food, I wouldn't have done anything differently. I would have shared the lasagna and the ossobuco. I love them both.
Yeah, that lasagna was the best lasagna I've ever had at a restaurant.
Look good in the photo.
The best lasagna I've ever had at a restaurant, ever.
Oh, and by the way, she gave us a couple cannolis. The stuffing of those cannolis were ridiculous.
Nuts.
The serving size of the lasagna was huge, too.
Huge. I ended up, because we're having two deals over Thanksgiving. We're going to some family, then we're having some folks over. I ordered two trays.
Nice. Good move.
Oh, cool. Just now?
Good move.
Yeah. This past weekend?
Yeah, over the weekend, I ordered two trays.
Why not?
Perfect.
Yeah.
You know, it's good.
Yeah, exactly.
But we posted pictures of it on our Chaz and AJ Facebook page, The Experience, and a zillion comments, and everybody loves that place. Consiglio's. In New Haven on Wooster Street. It was amazing.
Yeah, I sent a note to my friends who love we've taken to Adriana's, and I said we're going to now go to Cosigna. So we're looking forward to that, and I can't wait for our next adventure.
Me too. Where are we going?
Do we know? I have a month to do my homework, so we'll get one in before Christmas.
All right, good hot dogs.
Thank you so much.
Here he goes again.
I know you're waiting for it. That's why I said it.
He doesn't miss anything, AJ.
All right, take care, guys.
All right, thank you, Jeff. Jeff Warshaw, our CEO. James Andrew Miller, author of Tinderbox, which I feel like we just went through. HBO's Ruthless Pursuit of the New Frontiers. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey.
I like your book. So I got through the Sopranos part. I haven't gotten any. I started getting into the beginning of HBO, which I found fascinating. I didn't know the Dolans started it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The Dolans did?
Yeah.
Huh. More money.
They were around. Chuck Dolan was around just for a short time.
Yeah,
just about a year, and then he got bought out and by Time Inc., which owned HBO.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Sopranos here. Did HBO have anybody else in mind for the Tony Soprano part?
Well, HBO, you know, one of the things that HBO, it becomes clear with HBO is that unlike networks that kind of dictate what they want with their shows, they gave a lot of agency. They gave a lot of flexibility to showrunners and creators. So David Chase, who created and wrote the pilot for The Sopranos and was its guiding force for its entire run, he thought about Michael Rispoli and at one point, Stevie Van Zandt for the lead role.
Oh, wow.
And ultimately, and both of those guys were featured in the show, of course. But ultimately, he went to with Jim Gandolfini, which was obvious, you know,
clearly
a brilliant choice.
The right decision. But there was no proof that he was the right decision then. So it was really what was the driving force behind that decision?
And David told me it was a really cool thing he said. He goes, you know, he looked the part. Which I thought was just like, it's just so clarifying, right? I mean, yeah. Sometimes you can like, and by the way, HBO is not, never has been, but particularly at this time, they're not like testing different actors and going to, you know, research groups to see, oh, should we pick this one or that one? In fact, when the pilot for Sopranos was done, they actually did test it because it was so early in their existence that they wanted to, you know, they were trying to do what networks did. That
now explain back, like, testing. Kind of, they would play it for audiences in big cities. How would they find these people?
Yeah, they would put together a study group of people and get their reactions. And they wound up doing it, and it wasn't glowing. It wasn't like off the charts. It wasn't terrific. And they went with it anyway. A lot of networks sort of bailed out at that moment. And I think
so. He pitched it to Fox first, right? Fox Network.
He wrote it for Fox.
Oh,
yeah!
Holy crap!
Yeah.
Wow! Can you imagine that show on a regular network? Yep. Oh,
watered down.
Completely different.
Yep. Completely different.
I think Fox made a right decision, and obviously HBO made a great decision. But yeah. I couldn't imagine it without, you know, sex, violence, nudity, and all the other things that make
and that's the credits.
Show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There were rumors that the Sopranos, the family, was loosely based on James Galante, the owner of the Danbury Trashers. Did you hear any of that, or is there any of that true? Or
You know, I've heard various rumors about what serves as inspiration. I mean, look, David is Italian, and he loved The Godfather and loved a lot of Italian mythology through the years, but I don't think I don't think he ever said that there was a, I've never heard him say, he certainly didn't say to me that there was a, you know, one person or one particular family that fueled this.
That's interesting, because The Godfather had one set of a mafia family in America. A Goodfellas brought it a little bit more into reality of how things were, and then Sopranos took it to the next level.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. It's a guy with a family. I mean, there's one episode where he's choking out a guy to death, but also in the same episode, he's looking for colleges for his daughter.
Right.
That was the turning point of the series, I feel. That was when you knew, like, ooh, we're going to see some stuff we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's in your book, by the way.
Called College. Right. Yeah. That was episode 5 called College in the first season. And I think that was the paradigm shift. I mean, look, you could tell that there were elements in place already. I mean, Lorraine Bracco is a shrink. And I mean, great cast, Edie Falco, Michael Barrowley. But when you get to episode 5 and you have that powerful duality that you're talking about, where, you know, he just seems like an ordinary guy taking his kid on college is. Look at colleges, and then all of a sudden he sees this guy, this old nemesis who had turned on him, who had been hiding out, who had created this, you know, additional life. And then he's got to take him out, and he's got to do it while he's traveling around with his daughter without her knowing it. I mean, that was pretty powerful. There was also a episode many years later in the Sopranos lexicon called University, where I think it's probably one of the most powerful episodes ever done in television, where there's a dancer at the Bada Bing who was killed and by Joey, and it's just so raw. It's probably one of the most powerful episodes of The Sopranos ever done.
And James Gandolfini did not want to do a scene that involved masturbation.
No.
Right? Well. You know, look, David Chase told me this, and I think it goes to the fact that being Tony Soprano was very tough for Jim Gandolfini. He said he often had to go to very dark places in order to get that character out of him, and sometimes dwelling and drafting off of places that he himself as a human being had tried to suppress through the years. And so there were a series of times when he would push back, but this one was in particularly very difficult. He said he wasn't doing it. Ultimately, though, he was such a trooper that he did do it. And the ironic part of it, of course, is that they shot it, they put him through it, and then they edited it out. They decided not to even include it in the episode. So Oops. There you go.
So did he have? How did he express himself when there was something in a script that he didn't like?
I mean, look, I think that when you're on a show like The Sopranos, David Chase was very clear about the fact that he was the architect. He's the showrunner. And I'm not saying that there weren't times when cast members could influence or try and influence or express dismay or frustration at something that was happening in a scene or with their character for that matter. But the truth is that David really ran the show. And there were a lot of times. Look, Lorraine Bracco talks in the book about she was dismayed and disappointed by the way that the character, her shrink character ended with Tony. If you remember at the end of the show, it was a very brutal, brutal goodbye that the two of them had. She basically kicked him out of the office and said, I can't do anything for you anymore, because she had been kind of beat up by her friends about being so helpful to someone that they thought was a sociopath. So, you can express an opinion, but that doesn't mean that you're going to prevail.
That scene never made it in. So somewhere on a shelf somewhere is this scene no one's ever
going to see.
Going to see of James Gandolfini masturbating in a bathroom.
Oh, yeah. Probably should keep that away.
Now, in a gas station.
We don't have any.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's even worse.
Oh, Texaco? Yeah.
He was thinking about Julianna Margulies at the time. Remember, they had started something, then it didn't quite get finished, and his nephew Christopher wound up being with her, and Tony was really jealous about that. But I'm not sure. Look, you bring up an interesting point. I'm not sure whether they saved it or not.
Wow.
You know, sometimes they may have hit the delete key and just erased it, but I know it was shot.
Well, maybe like a director's cut, you know, if they have like a box set, they have those deleted scenes. Sometimes they include those.
Everyone knowing that he didn't want to do the scene in the first place, it would just, I don't think it would go over well with fans if they released that scene, you know.
Especially how respected he was.
Yeah. It's not something I'm dying to see.
Yeah,
I'm good.
Me neither. I'm good.
Yep.
Just visualizing it is better.
I don't want to think about it. Never happened. This never happened.
He Gandolfini had a real substance abuse issue during the filming of The Sopranos.
Well, one of the things that I was able to find out and report about was that they had done in 2003 an intervention with him because they were so worried. There was a period of time when he was late or he wouldn't show up for shoots or he was going through some difficult stuff. He was a great man. You know, when I was doing the SNL book, I remember the quote that Dan Aykroyd said about John Belushi at his funeral. He was a great man, but he was a bad boy. And I think that, you know, in some ways, Gandolfini, I mean, everyone loved him. He was an incredible actor, obviously, and so good to people, really generous and never was like narcissistic or egocentric and tried to spread the wealth around in terms of like publicity. Actually, in terms of wealth, he gave his co-stars money when he got a big deal. He shared some money, gave checks to everybody. But I think that he had his own internal demons and sometimes it was very difficult for him, particularly as he got more and more famous and there was more responsibility on his shoulders. Because, look, you know, the one thing, I mean, there were so many great characters in The Sopranos, right? But he is carrying that show. It is on his back. He is, you know, he's the foundation for it. And I think that sometimes that kind of pressure can aggravate or stimulate problems that one had in the past. And that was the case with Jim Gandolfini, and they tried to do an intervention.
This intervention, let's start with the Golden Globes with James Gandolfini.
Well, in 2005, he was supposed to be a presenter, and I kind of tracked down where he was instead of being inside the Beverly Hilton in Beverly Hills. And let's just say he was in no condition to present. And so all of a sudden HBO had to do a code red alert and pivot. And
well, he was outside. He was outside. I was reading your book. It's by the way, your book is awesome.
Thank you so much.
He was outside doing Snow Angels.
Oh,
with no snow on the ground.
Oh, hey.
Right. Well, that is a problem. It was L.A. and there wasn't snow. Yeah. Mm. It wasn't. So obviously not in a condition to present. And so they went to Michael Imperioli and said, we need a plan B. And look, if you're Michael Imperioli at that moment, right, the world is expecting James Gandolfini. And, you know, you're kind of like a little like, oh, I don't know if I want to step into those shoes. But the truth is, Michael did a great job. And the funny thing that Michael told me afterwards was he said to Gandolfini, you know, when you're present at the Golden Globes, there's like a $25,000 gift bag. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that they give you. And Michael said to Gandolfini, hey, listen, man, I think I deserve the goodies. And Gandolfini was like, you absolutely do. Take it.
Nice.
That's great.
They made an episode about that. They did a whole thing about the goodie bags in one of the later seasons.
Is that right?
Yes.
Little callback.
Ben Kingsley was going to be in the fake movie that Christopher was making, and they follow him into one of these places, and they're giving away like free cell phones and stuff. They're like, where the hell are we? What's going on?
Like Buick. I mean, it was like crazy. But I got to tell you, there was something. Remember some of the looks that Ben Kingsley gave Imperioli in those scenes? They were just, you don't even have to write any dialogue. He gave him looks like, are you out of your mind? Where are you? What planet are you from? And how did you get near me? There was so much disdain on his face. It was hilarious. That was like one of the things about The Sopranos, right? Because it just took you through 360 degrees of emotion, like pine barrens, right? I mean, you're out in the snow tracing down this Russian killer who's escaped from you. But there were moments of great comedy in there, and you could always make you cry, laugh, scare the hell out of you. I think that it was obviously all about the writing and the performances, but they went to every kind of place for human emotion in that show.
Did you talk to David Chase about the ending of the series? Final
episode? Yes, I did.
What did he say about that?
Well, I think there's two things that come clean, and I talked to all the HBO execs and everybody. It was so funny because when the HBO execs saw it, like, I guess they saw it maybe like a week before, they're all like, wait, there's something wrong with my tape. I didn't get the full ending. Send me a new tape. And they didn't realize what he had done. I mean, look, I think there's two headlines, right? One is HBO, again, gives so much power to its creators that's what David Chase wanted to do, and that's what they went with. There was nobody at HBO saying to David Chase, you're not allowed to do that. We're not going to let you do that. That's exactly what he wanted to do. He had in his mind for a while, and I think that that says a lot about HBO. The second thing is it says a lot about David Chase, because David Chase was not going to hold our hand and either give us this big, bloody shootout where Tony and his family dies, or just Tony dies, or have them walk into the sunset. He didn't care if it was uncomfortable for us. He didn't care if it was frustrating for us. He felt like this was the right thing to do for those characters and his show. And I think there's something really cool about that, because instead of pandering to try and figure out what would make us happy, he had a vision of what he wanted to do, and he went with it.
It's the most talked about ending in the history of television.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think there's another ending that people still talk about and debate. And I do love that it's almost book-like, where it lets the reader kind of fill in the blank. Like, how do you want it to end?
Yeah.
You know, and I read somewhere he was surprised at the anger that Tony didn't die, especially when, you know, you're friends with this person for 6 seasons. You just become attached to him. He becomes part of your family. Now you're pissed that he didn't die.
Well, you know, what was Freud had a definition of maturity, which is the ability to handle ambiguity. And I think a lot of people were kind of immature, so to speak, because they were just wrestling with that. But the other big ending that I had to deal with also was the truncated ending of Game of Thrones, because HBO had wanted that show to go on for at least 2 more seasons. And the showrunners in that case said, nope, we're out after season 8, and there's only going to be 6 episodes in that final season. And once again, HBO, you know, they're going to let the creators do what they want to do. But I think that a lot of Game of Thrones fans who were so loyal to that show and so desperate for more, even though they heard that there was going to be an abbreviated ending, still were hoping for the best. And this last 2 episodes left a lot of Game of Thrones fans with a bad taste in their mouth.
Lots more to talk to you about, so we got to get you back here. And we're linked up to your book, Tinderbox, HBO's Ruthless Pursuit of the New Frontiers. James Andrew Miller, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. We have another story of giving now. It's Jason Flint, Vice President, Park City Ford in Bridgeport. Good morning.
Good morning.
Park City. Where Fairfield County comes.
Ford! Let me guess, you give me a Bronco?
Yeah, sure, the year. So I really appreciate you guys taking the time and having me on this morning.
Of course.
I want to say that you guys were a real inspiration to all of this last week when you had the lady on from the Spooner House in Shelton. And so it got my head thinking after she said she only had 175 turkeys and they were trying to get to 500. So I got together with my guys and we came up with a couple small stores, and we were able to put together originally 50 turkeys to donate to them next Wednesday on their turkey drive. And then, you know, I talked to Andy Alcosser, a guy that works for you, and talked to Ashley about it. And I thought that 50 wasn't enough. So I was able to put together another 50, so we're going to be able to donate 100 turkeys next Wednesday.
Wow.
It's nice.
Wonderful time. It's the most wonderful time. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
No one even wants to try to hold the note.
That was all AJ's note right there.
Yeah, I gave it a shot. It wasn't really a note. It was pain, actually.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I tell you, I wouldn't have gotten done if it wasn't for you guys on the radio in the morning talking about it and trying to bring it to the public. And, you know, it's been very fortunate this year. And you know, I learned as a child that, you know, when you have a little bit more, sometimes it's better to give it to somebody else and hold on to it. So, you know, I just firmly believe that giving is good. And, you know, there's a lot of people this year that have been affected, that are good people, that just got a bad break. And, you know, any chance that I can do to help that, you know, is important. So, you know, I hope everybody this year has a really good Thanksgiving. And this is just one way of trying to help people do that. So,
yeah. So when you're sitting down having your Thanksgiving meal,
exactly,
you'll know that you helped somebody else, some other family.
Doing the same thing.
Have a happy Thanksgiving meal.
Correct. So,
35th annual Smile Dental Center and Sufferman Family Thanksgiving Food Drive happening this Wednesday, 10 a.m. to 2 at the Smile Dental Center, 1000 Bridgeport Avenue in Shelton. You can't miss it. They're out there in their pilgrim and the turkey costumes.
Yeah, if you see that, you're definitely there.
Yeah.
You're not tripping.
You won't drive by accident.
No.
So, that's fantastic. I think you should put the 100 turkeys in a Bronco.
Yeah.
And bring it over and just leave everything.
All right. And then when you're done with the Bronco, I'll take it.
The turkeys and the Bronco?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure we can figure something out.
How are those Broncos selling? Can you even keep them on the floor?
No, they're completely sold out until almost 2023 right now.
Wow. So
just about, yeah. Huh. Everyone that we had 123 retail orders at our store alone, and you know, we're delivering them every month, and you know, I can't deliver them. They're being produced over a course of, you know, a year and a half, so some 21, some a lot of 22s, and then 23s. So
I wanted the two-door with the in orange. It's awesome.
Yeah, you gotta have a two-door.
Yeah, two-door in orange.
Are they gonna stop four-door,
whatever you want.
Yeah, are they gonna stop making them at some point?
There's no plans to right now. Okay. I mean, Ford is sold out of pretty much everything they make right now. We can't, I mean, Transits are sold out. Explorers are sold out. I mean, there's a tremendous vehicle lineup that they have. And as a result, they've been very successful at selling them. Unfortunately, at the same time, we have no inventory as a result. But, you know.
I saw a nice Mustang on your lot Saturday.
Yeah.
I drove by.
Yeah, if you don't have a Bronco, I'll take a Mustang GT convertible.
Yeah.
Hey, just really not that picky.
Really?
How long does it take to order, like, a Mustang GT convertible?
If you ordered one from the factory, normally it would take about 6 to 8 weeks, as long as there's no holidays in between that the factory might be shut down. But generally, a Mustang takes about 6 to 8 weeks. That's built right here in Flat Rock, Michigan. And I have a Mustang GT convertible. I absolutely love it. I drive it every day. And I also have a Mustang Shelby, and most fun car I've ever had. So,
can you get a Shelby now?
You can get a Shelby GT500, which is the
okay. If we got a
760 horsepower monster, so but that'll take about 16 weeks to get from the factory.
Wow, that's okay.
What are they going for? They're like
they start around 85. And they, you know, then you can add more options and get them north of 100.
My first house was $65,000.
I have $35 on me. What can I get for that?
I remember. All right, so I have a regular Shelby, and a friend of mine had.
You don't have a regular Shelby. You have a Shelby GT 350. That's
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, H. You know,
sure, those numbers mean something.
Yeah.
They do.
It's collectible. There's only right. 500 made. But
it's a great car.
I always thought to myself, well, you don't need any more horsepower than this. And then someone took me for a ride in a 500. Actually, they let me drive it. They're like, oh, yeah, let's go. We get on the highway. That thing, I felt like I was in an Apollo
rocket. Yeah.
I was pushed back to the seat.
There's nothing like horsepower, man.
I almost couldn't breathe.
Yeah, well, nothing the problem like is it. You're not supposed to break 65. So, you know, it's just how fast you get to 65, right?
Right. That's it.
Wink, yeah, wink, nudge, right. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for 100 turkeys.
Incredible. Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll be delivering them.
Park City, Fairfield County,
thank you very much, all of you. I really appreciate it, and I'll be delivering them myself on Wednesday. So
awesome.
I look forward to seeing you there.
I'll see you there. All right, Jason, thank you.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now, and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.